Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, preparing for Christmas. At his last Wednesday audience before Christmas, Pope Benedict reflects on the mystery of Christ's incarnation and urges all Christians to be spiritually prepared for his coming. Contemplating Christmas. Cardinal O'Brien of Edinburgh and Archbishop Kelly of Liverpool both look back at Pope Benedict's recent visit to Britain as they reflect on the Christmas message. Christmas Down Under. Cardinal Pell of Sydney takes stock of the situation in Australia in his reflection for the festive season. And Bethlehem Blues. We tap into the current situation and mood of the small Christian community in the town where Jesus was born and learn how the security barrier heavily restricts the daily lives and movements of Bethlehem's inhabitants. At his last Wednesday General Audience before Christmas, Pope Benedict reflected on the mystery of Christ's birth and urged all Christians to be spiritually prepared for his coming. Emma McCarthy reports.
The Vatican Nativity scene is still tightly under wraps with only 2 days to go to Christmas. But on Wednesday, Pope Benedict XVI told thousands of pilgrims and visitors at his general audience that he was delighted that the tradition of building cribs in homes and workplaces is still alive and, moreover, growing.
We share in the quiet joy which fills the hearts of Mary and Joseph, and also who first welcomes the promised Saviour, who is Emmanuel, God with us. By taking our flesh, the Lord saved us from the sin of our first parents. Now he bids us to become like him, to see the world through his eyes, and to let our hearts be transformed by his infinite goodness and mercy.
Looking ahead to the 12 days of the festive season, the Pope pointed out that the Christmas crib, traditionally built during Advent, is a visible sign of our awaiting the coming of the Lord, and still capable of evoking wonderment in the hearts of adults and children alike.
May the wonderment that the crib evokes in children and adults alike bring us closer to the mystery of God's love revealed in the incarnation of his beloved Son.
While the festive season usually signals a time of rest for most of us, in the coming days Pope Benedict XVI will be presiding over numerous traditional liturgical celebrations here in St. Peter's. Monsignor Marini, Master of Papal Ceremonies, issued the list of upcoming appointments Wednesday. Among them, the Christmas Vigil, Friday, December 24th, beginning at 10 p.m. Rome time. The Pope's Christmas Message, Urbi et Orbi, to the City and the World, Saturday, December 25th, at 12 p.m. Rome time. On Friday, December 31st, the Pope will preside at Vespers for the Feast of Mary, Queen of Peace, followed by the exposure of the Blessed Sacrament and the singing of the traditional hymn Te Deum, while on New Year's Day the Pope will preside at Mass at 10 a.m. local time in St. Peter's Basilica. All ceremonies will be broadcast live by Vatican Radio and are accessible on the website at www.vaticanradio.org. Finally, on Wednesday, Pope Benedict XVI wished all those present a very special Christmas time.
To all of you, and especially the children, I offer my heartfelt good wishes for a serene and joy-filled Christmas.
Thank you.
highlight of 2010 for the Church in Britain was Pope Benedict's four-day visit to England and Scotland in September, which saw him presiding over the beatification of the 19th century Anglican convert Cardinal John Henry Newman. The Pope's first stop was in Scotland, and Cardinal Keith Patrick O'Brien of Edinburgh recalls the papal visit during this reflection for the coming Feast of Christmas.
The celebration of the Feast of Christmas, if possible in our own family circles, should indeed bring us much joy, but it should also remind us of the reality of the world in which we live, a world in which so very many others live in indescribable poverty on a scale we simply cannot imagine. The past year has been one of many celebrations, including the momentous visit of Pope Benedict XVI to our country. Yet, whether personal or national, any celebrations we have had to date pale in comparison to the one we now prepare for as we get ready to commemorate the greatest event in human history, the birth of Jesus Christ, the Son of God and Son of Mary, in a stable at Bethlehem. There was no pomp and ceremony in connection with the birth of Jesus, rather the opposite. It took place in simplicity and in poverty. And perhaps it is at a time of increasing austerity in our own country that we might realise that we are being called to a more simple form of lifestyle, and that a more simple way of life could even help us should more difficult economic times face us in the years which lie ahead. Our greatest example in all of this is that birth of Jesus Christ. That is the event which should continue to inspire us now and in the years which lie ahead. May that nativity scene of Jesus, Mary and Joseph remind us of those bonds of love which brought those three people together. That love which should continue to inspire us in our own lives, now and in the future. I wish you all a peaceful and holy Christmas and every blessing in the year to come.
That was Cardinal Keith Patrick O'Brien of St. Andrew's in Edinburgh. Another British prelate, Archbishop Patrick Kelly of Liverpool, also recalls the papal visit in his reflection on Christmas.
2010 will be remembered as the year Pope Benedict was among us. Wherever he went, he proclaimed the loving wisdom, the wisest love of our God. And above all, that wisdom and love made manifest, as Blessed John Henry Newman taught us to sing, when it was so generous, it brought among us the Son of God, when all was sin and shame. On Christmas Day, after I've celebrated Midnight Mass in Liverpool's Metropolitan Cathedral, which will be televised on BBC, and when morning comes, celebrated Mass in Liverpool's prison, I'll make my way to enjoy Christmas dinner with my sister. But on the way, I know what I must do. Visit the grave where my father, mother and other sister are buried. Few of us are not drawn to remember dark days in our family story at this time of the year, but we do so with serenity and deep peace of mind in the midst of tears because, in Pope Benedict's words, the Father of life is our physician par excellence, and he does not cease to bend lovingly over suffering humanity. Therefore, Christmas shall be filled with peace and joy.
That was Archbishop Patrick Kelly of Liverpool. For our next Christmas message, we move from Britain right across the world to Australia, where Cardinal George Pell of Sydney takes stock of the local situation as people there prepare to celebrate the festive season.
Christmas has again come upon us quickly as we gather to celebrate the most popular feast and festival in the calendar. A mother and a father with a new child provoke universal approval, while the claim that Mary's baby is the only Son of God, the anointed one who was long awaited, is a double blessing for those who believe. In the eastern states, the drought has broken after about 10 years as the rain started and continued to fall. We thank God for all the long-term good the floods will do to the river systems and the countryside, while ruefully acknowledging the dashed hopes for a bumper harvest. Australia is often like this, but much, indeed most of Australian life is good, and those of us blessed with prosperity and happiness should strive to spread the good cheer to those who are battling. Many of the best aspects of life on our vast continent derive from our Christian tradition, even as some don't recognise this and a few refuse to acknowledge it. Our two most important holidays celebrate Christmas and Easter. Sunday is still a day of rest in the much-loved Australian weekend. We find church communities in every suburb, and in every city and town, Christian schools, aged care facilities, welfare agencies, and often hospitals are serving everyone. We acknowledge with gratitude the presence of the other major religious traditions and relish their friendship and cooperation. All people of goodwill, irreligious and religious, contribute. But it remains a fact that at the even more important level of virtues and values, rather than institutions, Christianity continues as a major force. The Australian principle of a fair go for all cannot be understood without the Christian teachings of universal love and forgiveness. Marriage, family, truth-telling, and social justice derive from the Judeo-Christian tradition. The wonderful reception from almost the whole population to the canonisation of St Mary of the Cross MacKillop demonstrated once again, like World Youth Day, the respect and affection of majority Australia for Christianity. It remains only for us as Christians to practice what we preach, and for me to wish everyone, especially the sad and the sick, a happy and a peaceful Christmas.
That was Cardinal George Pell of Sydney. Bethlehem is the birthplace of Jesus, and at Christmas time our thoughts instinctively turn to this small town in the Holy Land, where the Christian message began. But 2,000 years after that momentous nativity, how many Christians are still living there? Once a majority Christian town, Bethlehem has seen the percentage of Christians living there steadily dwindle, and this is a pattern repeated across the rest of the Holy Land. The separation barrier between Israel and the Palestinian territories has hit Bethlehem particularly hard by effectively cutting off easy access to the nearby city of Jerusalem. The restrictions on movement caused by the separation barrier and Israeli checkpoints, together with the economic blockade, high unemployment, and the ongoing stalemate in the Israeli-Palestinian peace process, are all factors encouraging a certain number of Palestinian Christians each year to turn their back on their native land. Brother Neil Keefe is Director of Instructional Technology at Bethlehem University, a Catholic institution of higher learning open to students of all faith traditions. He spoke to me about the current mood of Bethlehem's inhabitants in this Christmas season and the daily difficulties they have to endure.
I think it's marginally better than it's been for some years. Bethlehem is beginning to see a resurgence of tourism, and of course that Bethlehem's entire economy is based on tourism, and so that is changing the attitude positively. At the same time, we're trapped behind the barrier, the wall, whatever name you want to use for it, and that makes people that are live here or just live in Bethlehem as their small jail that they can move around in, and that's the limit of their ability to move freely without explicit permission from the Israelis.
You talked about the resurgence of tourism. Do you have any idea how many pilgrims have come or are in the process of coming to Bethlehem for the Christmas festivities?
The estimate from the Palestinian Ministry of Tourism is that they're expecting about 10,000 pilgrims on December 24th and 25th.
What about the Christian community? I mean, how badly is it suffering? You mentioned there, of course, you know, the security barrier and how it restricts everybody's movements. Is unemployment very high?
Yes, unemployment is considerably higher than you would like. It's not as bad as it was 2 or 3 years ago. What we find is our graduates in general find work, but it's slow. They don't walk straight out the door and into work.
Are many Christian families continuing to emigrate then to escape, as I say, these restrictions posed by the security barrier and the general lack of easy employment, plus, of course, the stalemate in the Israeli-Palestinian peace process?
I don't have concrete figures. My impression is that the immigration is not as severe as it was some time ago. And one of the things I notice at the university is that the number of Christian applicants each year continues to climb. Not rapidly, but it's going up. I believe that what's really happening here is the absolute number of Christians in the last few years is actually increasing. The problem, however, though, is the Muslim population is increasing faster. So we see a decline in the percentage of Christians, while the absolute number, I think, is going up slowly. But that's not usually mentioned when people talk about the problem of immigration.
Okay, staying on the theme of problems, we mentioned earlier the security barrier and how this has basically cut off Bethlehem from the nearby city of Jerusalem and heavily restricted movements. I mean, can you give us some examples of how this security barrier impacts on the daily life of people who live in and around Bethlehem?
Well, people who actually live in the West Bank cannot leave the West Bank without permission of the Israelis. So if someone would like to visit Israel, say for a doctor's appointment, they first of all have to get permission here to go to Jerusalem. That sometimes takes days or weeks to obtain, and then it's limited for a few hours in which they can go through the security barrier, go to Jerusalem for the business, and then they usually have to be back by 7 p.m. that evening. I noticed Israel advertised in the paper the other day that they're going to be allowing a certain number of Christians to attend Mass in Jerusalem for the Feast of Christmas. They're making a big issue out of allowing a certain number. We'll try to make it look like things aren't quite as bad as they are. But on a day-to-day basis, many of our faculty haven't been to Jerusalem for 3 or 4 years just because of the hassle that's involved every time they want to do it.
Well, you talk about hassle. Before the security barrier was built, how long did it take somebody to drive from Bethlehem to Jerusalem? And, you know, what are the hassles that they have to contend with now?
Well, when I first arrived, which was 1991, there was no barrier between Jerusalem and Bethlehem. There's no checkpoint. In March of 1993, the checkpoint appeared. And at first, it was just a jeep and two soldiers. But it gradually became more and more bigger operation, more barrier, more elaborate. About 4 years ago, a huge, huge checkpoint was built where people on foot have to walk through a security barrier. People driving have to stop, show passports, have their car inspected, and then proceed on. So the center of Jerusalem, about 5 miles from Bethlehem. So, you know, it used to be about a 10 to 15 minute drive. Now, in addition to that drive, I always give myself at least 15 to 20 minutes extra time. But I'm fortunate. I have an American passport that gets me through. Palestinians in a totally different situation. They often just don't try to go anymore. Most have just given up. It just isn't worth the hassle. And so they're confined to Bethlehem. Sometimes even traveling within the West Bank can be very difficult, too, because to go from Bethlehem to Ramallah, right now it's open, but the checkpoint could pop up. They have what they call flying checkpoints that pop up occasionally. So it really does trap them.
Let's turn to the focus of the Christmas celebrations in Bethlehem, the Church of the Nativity and Manger Square. Can you briefly paint us a picture of the church and the square for those listeners like me who've never seen it, and their main features?
The church is one of the oldest in the world, and it was built by St. Helena, the mother of Constantine, in 327 and was completed in the year 333. It survived for quite a while in that form, but in 565, the church built by St. Helena was leveled, but then it was rebuilt in 565. It's a large building. It has a main aspe and then two side columns. The altar is where you'd expect it in most churches, and immediately below the altar is the crypt, which is the cave in which historically it's said that that's where the child Jesus was born. The church itself sits adjacent to Manger Square, which is not terribly large. It may be the size of a football field or a soccer pitch, and that's the center of Bethlehem. That's where all of the Christmas activities take place. That's where the patriarch comes through as he comes from Jerusalem to Bethlehem on Christmas Eve. And it's a very festive occasion at the Christmas time each year. It's a parade of scouts, and local dignitaries are included in the procession. And that usually takes place the afternoon of Christmas Eve, so the patriarch comes and celebrates the Midnight Mass later that day.
And how many people generally attend the Midnight Mass? I imagine it must be extremely popular, as you say, definitely the highlight.
Yes, it's very crowded. This is kind of a guess, but probably the capacity of the church would be in the neighborhood of 500 people. The Midnight Mass is actually held in St. Catherine's Church, which is the immediately adjacent to the Basilica of the Nativity. You can go inside, you can go from one church to the other. But the Basilica of the Nativity is administered by the Greek Orthodox, the Roman Catholic, and Armenian Orthodox together. But it serves as the parish church for the Greek Orthodox. And St. Catherine's, which is immediately adjacent to it, serves as the parish church for the Roman Catholics, or the Latin Catholics, as they usually call it, referred to here. It's in St. Catherine's that the Midnight Mass is held.
You talked about the fact that the crypt underneath, which is historically believed to be the place where Jesus was born, what does that consist of? Can you sort of describe that for us?
Yes, it's not very big. The total room maybe would be 10 meters long and 5 meters wide, although it's not rectangular since it was a cave. There's a set of steps coming down on one side, and then there's a star, a silver star, which marks the spot of the birth under the main altar, and then there's another set of steps leading up the other side, so that pilgrims coming often stand in line for quite a while to be able to go down a very narrow, steep steps to the location of the cave. They're able to spend a few minutes there in adoration and then move up the steps on the opposite side. On Christmas Day, after the Midnight Mass, masses are celebrated almost continuously for a full day in the crypt. The number of people that it could hold at any one time would be 20, 25 people, something like that, could be in that room at one time for a Mass, and then half hour later, a second Mass. And that continues during most of the day.
Coming back to the general situation in Bethlehem, when you go about and talk to people there, how do people, particularly the Christian community, feel about their future? Do they feel that this small Christian community can survive there in the town where Jesus was born? Do they feel relatively or cautiously upbeat about the future?
Well, they're determined they're going to stay. That's the attitude, the response you get from most of the Christian people is that, you know, we're here, Bethlehem is our hometown, we're going to stay, we're not going to leave. And that's very strong. At the same time, when we look at what and call the peace process, that there just isn't much in the way of hope. We don't see any way forward. None of the things that have been done in the last few years seem to indicate that there's going to be a future Palestinian state. People are patient. They hope it's going to happen. They pray for it to happen. The American activities to try to reach a settlement with the Israelis to stop building the settlements, that stopped because there was no success there. I think the way most people feel about it is that Israel is not interested in peace, and unless the Americans force them to do something, there just is not going to be any Palestinian state, because Israel doesn't want a Palestinian state, and they're willing to do whatever they can to try to prevent it. The hope for a long time has been the Americans, and maybe now a little bit more outreach to the rest of the international community. But the people here have been disappointed again and again and again, and so they don't get their hopes up. They want something to happen. They pray something will happen, but they don't see what's going to happen or how it's going to happen. So they're mostly just, we'll stay, we'll do what we can, we'll try to get along with our lives as best we can. And I suppose that's one of the positive things about the people here, is that they don't let it get them down on a day-to-day basis. They continue on with their lives, they get their education, they get married, they have children, they have families. They live their life under the shadow of the occupation, hoping that it will end soon, but not seeing exactly how that's going to happen.
I was speaking to Brother Neil Keefe of Bethlehem University. Staying on the musical theme of Christmas, we end our program today by listening to the first verse of one of our best-loved Christmas carols, O Come, All Ye Faithful. That's all for today from me, Susie Hodges, here at the English programme of Vatican Radio. But we do hope you have enjoyed listening to us. We'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. And don't forget, you can always find our programmes at any time of the day on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. In the meantime, I wish all of you a very happy and blessed Christmas. Laudato Jesus Christus.